Thanks for joining us. This is Notepad. I'm your host, Ibrahim Sani. This is a day after the budget has been presented. We're pretty sure that many of you are both equally excited as well as a little bit more anxious about the kind of outcome that will come from this budget. After the budget was presented yesterday, there were a lot of conversations into how Malaysia is going to move forward. My focus for this evening is, of course, trying to understand where we stand amongst investors, particularly amongst VCs or venture capitals, and as well as foreign investors outright. Joining us for today is Aaron Sarma of Scale Up Malaysia, a good friend of mine. Aaron, let's do a quick reaction analysis of what you thought about the budget. Were you surprised? Were you happy? What would be some of the interesting things that you thought would be important for us to keep in mind when we explore the budget even further?
So I think from the budget, one thing I'm really looking at is, of course, the commitment we're making to SMEs and how we help them digitize. I think over the last few years, we've seen some really good things from the government. There was the SME digitization grant, which they released. I think that's a really good initiative. And I think we should keep that up, right? Because I think even though we've kind of gotten a lot of SMEs on board and using digital solutions like payment gateways, like POS systems, like CRM systems, we should do more of it because there's a huge group of SMEs who are still using pen and paper. So I think that's really something that's important to me. Another thing I'm really looking at is talent development, how we are helping talent to get digitized, learning skills. The skills of the future really are in the digital space. And if we don't help our talent develop their skill sets, A, they will not be competitive in the world, and we're going to lose a lot of good guys to foreign employers across the border or around the world. I'm also obviously very passionate about the startup space. That's kind of where I spend a lot of my time. So very interested to see how we're helping startups with grants and investments, and specifically like in things like Punjana Capital, investing in more startups through VC firms, helping them grow. Because I think we've got a lot of potential in Malaysia. We just have a challenge unlocking that potential and helping them get out of Malaysia to the region and to the world.
Okay. As you alluded to earlier, so the budget did address SMEs. It does address digitization. It does address the kind of mega improvements through, say, for instance, institutions like Punjana and many more. There's a lot more that is going to be done next year. But before we jump to all that, I'd rather do a quick dipstick test on where we are right now amongst the market analysts and market watchers. How do we stand? How do we fare against investors, both domestic and foreign? Is Malaysia still an attractive place to dump their money at?
Okay, so last week I was at this thing called the Private Equity Venture Capital Conference in Singapore. It's like there are limited partners there or investors there. There are also a lot of private equity firms and venture capital firms who attend this event. And at Scale Up Malaysia, we are also investing in early stage startups. So we felt it's important to kind of be visible regionally to kind of understand how the market is thinking.
Okay.
To me, the saddest thing that I experienced when I was there was not that Malaysia was insulted or people didn't think the market was attractive or people said not so good things about startups. Was the fact that we weren't even mentioned. Like, the people on stage would mention other markets like Indonesia, they'll mention Singapore, of course, Thailand, some will even mention Philippines and Vietnam, of course.
So this is less than unattractive. This is just forgotten.
Forgotten. Like, we are flyover country for a lot of venture capital firms. And this is a huge concern, right? Because the issue is why? Why do they not think our startups are valuable enough? And that is something that was really...
What would be some of your speculative answers?
So I think one thing is, I do feel that in Malaysia, number one, we're not producing enough startups, right? And I think one of the challenges around that is that we need to give people a pathway to start a company. Part of that is through education, part of that is through capital. And really what we're lacking over the last few years is a lot of capital at the early stage. What I find is that the government can play a very big role here, which is why I'm looking at agencies like Meranti and Cradle to play and be the risk capital, right? Where the private sector may not want to invest, they can play a role here by saying, we're going to dump the first check because that's where the government can play, right? In innovation, in ideas, because that's how we create the next generation of startups. Because when we create these early stage bets, these kind of new ideas will kind of grow up into better companies. Eventually, they'll come into the path of an investor like us, and we'll write a check to those guys as well. But what we're seeing, actually, even at Scale Up Malaysia, is that there really aren't that many new companies, at least not the volume that we need to in a market like ours to really be attractive. So one is the number of startups, right? And another thing is that locally, we don't really have a strong venture capital class, right? I think at any one point in time, There are probably less than 20 active VCs in this country at any one point in time, which is a problem, right? If you go to Singapore, there's a joke. We were walking down Clarke Quay one evening after dinner, and we just happened upon a random building waiting for our taxi to pick us up. And I looked at the board at that building, and every entity was a ventures, a capital or investment holding company. Yeah. Like really, like in Singapore, there are a lot of venture capital or investor presence, right? Yeah. In Malaysia, not so much the case, especially in the startup space.
Yeah.
So I think that's an opportunity, right? We need to encourage more people to create venture capital firms. There's a lot of capital in Malaysia. I think there's a lot of unlocked capital in corporates, in high net worth individuals. They just don't know where to put it. And if we kind of, if the SC can play a role in this place to help incentivize the creation of more venture
capital. SC, Securities Commission.
Yes, yeah, because that's the body that regulates venture capital firms.
Okay.
Then we are in a position where we can invest in more early stage startups. Well-funded startups will grow fast and attract regional investment.
It's also important for us to note into why or how it got here, right? Mm. The fact that Malaysia is a forgotten market. Was this an overnight doing? Do you feel that this has been in the making for the past few years? How do we end up here where we are forgotten?
It's a really good question, right? I feel like we should not be here because we were like one of the first markets in the world to start with what we call the MSC in late 1997.
Yeah, Multimedia Super Corridor.
We started this really, really early, and we were very kind of on the precipice back in the day.
Yeah.
So it's really kind of stunning that, you know, we've not been able to capitalize on this, right?
Yeah.
I think a part of it is a function of us not understanding that talent is such an important component. I mentioned it earlier as well, right? Simple things like, do our students understand how to code? These are things that we could have done earlier on. Other markets are doing it now, right? You know, Thailand has instituted that every student needs to learn to code. We still don't do that in Malaysia, right? And how can we be truly digital if coding is relegated to certain parts of the community or people from out of Malaysia? One reason why, for example, Vietnam is so exciting to a lot of investors is because they built an entire development agency class, right? A lot of people were sending to dev shops, their work to dev shops in Vietnam because, you know, there are hundreds of these dev shops. You know, I know I spoke to some of them back in the day as well, right? And these dev shops have realized, hey, I can code, I can build software, I can build solutions. I'm going to now build a startup.
Yeah.
And therefore, they have the talent advantage and the market size advantage that allows them to kind of build these great startups, which is why Vietnam has become interesting.
Okay.
So that's one thing is, I think, our talent, right? The other thing is just a function of, again, maybe talent and capital are kind of linked as well. We don't fund our companies the way we should. Right.
Yeah. It is linked. If that's the case,
it is linked. Right. For example, right. I would always compare that if you look at a Singaporean startup in, let's say, a POS systems startup, right.
Yep.
And you look at a Malaysian startup, they're just exactly the same thing. What's likely the case, especially if they're the same tier of growth, is that the Singaporean guy has raised the exact same amount of capital as the Malaysian guy. But in US dollars and Malaysia, raised in ringgit.
Yeah.
So there's a 4-to-1 advantage already, right?
Yeah.
And so that's something that I
4.6,
think.
4.6 actually, but never mind. Not to say corrected, but yes. It's going to possibly even 5, but yes.
Possibly even 5, that's right. So like, this is a huge issue, right? Because if I'm a good coder, which company will I want to work for? The Malaysian guy who will probably pay me, you know,
ringgit.
6,000 to 7,000 ringgit? Or should I go for the Singaporean startup who will pay me $8,000? Right? The choice is very clear, right? Now, especially post-pandemic, with the option of remote work, this has become even more apparent because now I don't even have to leave my house. I can sit in my sarong and mentakap and code for a company in Singapore, Indonesia,
and be paid US dollars.
Be paid US dollars, right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. We'll go for one short break. When we come back, we'll discuss a little bit more with Aaron Sarma of Scale Up Malaysia. We'll be right back after these messages. Hey, thanks for joining us or continuing on this conversation. We're covering budget 2023 in the studio. Actually, we're not in the studio, Aaron. We're taping this interview at MBank's building here in Raja Chulan. Aaron, picking up where we left off, There's a lot of opportunities for us to fix. There are institutions that are currently working with you guys right now in order for us to better the environment. But I still want to stick on the fact that that PEVC conference did shed some light into what you think about other foreign investors think about Malaysia as a market. Yeah. The issue, of course, is also political risk. Election is brewing, I suppose. We don't know when or where or how it's going to be called. We're also unsure about the kind of results that would stem out from this political scenario. Is this impacting the kind of mood for investors coming into the country?
I mean, I think I'll be remiss if I say no, right? Obviously, this is kind of a cloud over a lot of the opportunity in the market, right? A lot of VCs would say that, you know what, we'll wait for this kind of uncertainty to blow over before we come in. Set up shop in Malaysia or even have a presence here, right? I see a lot of like Singaporean VCs have the attitude that if a good Malaysian company does well, they'll come to Singapore anyway. So why should I take this additional kind of risk or additional effort to, you know, take an hour flight to Kuala Lumpur when the guys can just come over to see me? So I think, yeah, the political lens does kind of colour a lot of the discussion, which is unfortunate, which I'm hoping, like you, that we'll have some clarity soon enough.
Okay, and of course, the institutions that you mentioned, SC, Meranti, Cradle, they too have to operate within the governmental institutions. Yeah. Do you feel that governmental institutions like these and more that maybe you know, you haven't mentioned do still play a key role in making this work? Why I'm asking is because when you look at, say, Silicon Valley, when you look at the institutions in, say, southern part of China, in fact, some parts of Singapore as well, you don't see much government intervention coming into play to raise up the startup culture, and therefore VCs don't necessarily have to deal so much with government. Yeah. Why do you feel that Malaysia is still entrenched in terms of getting the governmental institutions up and running to help the VC scene?
So I think it's a bit of a nuanced question, right? Malaysia has always had a lot of government intervention, which has been our strength and maybe a bit of a
Achilles heel.
Achilles heel or a crutch to us, right? Yeah. And I find that the early stage intervention, like the work that Cradle did, right, a couple of years ago, where they did like a 150,000 ringgit grant for prototyping, created a wave of lots and lots of startups, right? And those startups are still around today. I mean, we applied for, when I was running my startup, we applied for that grant as well. And I think like hundreds, if not thousands of startups applied for that grant. And that created like a funnel, a giant funnel of new companies, which you could then pick and choose who you want to back and help them grow, right? I think that's really important. We don't have this grant anymore, which I think is a bit of a challenge, right? Like, you need that early stage risk capital to kind of create those new ideas, right? I think like the government can play a good role, but I do feel that the government should only play a role where the private sector can't. So what we have now compared to 10 years ago is that we do have some venture capitalists in the market, right? But we need to create more. So instead of government becoming the venture capital firm, we should maybe encourage more private sector people who want to start venture capital firms to start more venture capital firms, which I think will enrich the market. Just to the point about other countries not having a lot of government intervention. I do know that other countries have a lot of government support in the ecosystem because they recognize that, you know, if you create a large, fast-growing company or a startup, it helps the GDP of a country. Right? It helps them, you know, kind of have more jobs, impact to the economy is positive, digitization is also there as well. But I think it's about the role. I was moderating a panel at WCIT in Penang a couple of weeks ago. One of the panelists was from the government of Indonesia, right? And I shared a joke, right? Because there was a point where I went to Indonesia, I was with an agency here where I was consulting with them. And I remember asking a very well set up startup there, like, you know, how much does the government help you? And the guy turned to me.
In Indonesia,
Jakarta, right? It was a restaurant, and he turned to me and said, "Hey, Aaron, thanks for asking the question, but you're the first government guy I've met." And I was just a consultant for an agency here in Malaysia at the time, right? So I asked the question to this guy as well. I was like, "What's your attitude as a government agency focusing on the startup space?" And he said something very interesting. He said, "In Indonesia, they have created 4 unicorns, right? And that was before they had any government ministries intervening in the space. So their attitude now is that we don't want to mess with anything. We want to just facilitate." And which I think is the role of the government, right? Where the private sector has an incentive, like venture capital, like running profit, that's where the private sector should shine, but the government just adds a little bit of a boost. Which is why I've always been a big fan of things like the Penjana capital allocation, because it is where the government can help, which is obviously with capital to match the private sector VCs, with maybe connections within the government to help these companies kind of find their way through regulatory hurdles. But ultimately, the decision for investment is made by private sector fund managers, the people who run the entire process are private sector people, experienced VCs, and they have the component of bringing foreign VCs as a partner for that as well. So you get that knowledge transfer. You also get the private sector incentivized in the process as well. We should encourage more things like this, where let the private sector run the programs, let them run the investments. Government just adds that boost on the side instead of becoming the private sector entity themselves.
Okay. We'll go for one more short break before we continue on our conversation with Aaron Sarma of Scale Up Malaysia. We'll be right back after these messages. Thanks for staying on with us. Okay, we're talking about Budget 2023. We're also talking about the macroeconomic conditions of the country. A few days ago, I spoke with the Group CEO of AmBank. He was actually extremely bullish about Malaysia. We're looking at a situation where it's also important for us to understand what would be some of the headwinds that we need to navigate. Aaron, are you blank Datuk Sulaiman of AmBank? Are you as bullish for Malaysia as he was then a few days ago?
So I think, you know, it's going to be a very difficult period for a lot of businesses over the next 12 to 18 months. I think there's a lot of uncertainty in the market. There's wars in east of Europe. The market's also not doing as well. There's also all sorts of other kind of effects that are going to layer on top of each other, right? So I think these are challenges that will be there, and how this plays out, hopefully we'll see like the bottom in a few months and then we'll start seeing some growth.
Yep.
But this will affect businesses, right? So I think businesses are going to have a very difficult period, and we're seeing it with a lot of blue chip startups, not just in Malaysia, but around the world, having to tighten their belts and having to kind of do that to sustain this difficult period, right? Okay. But I think from an investor standpoint, this is literally the best time to invest in early stage startups. Because right now what we're seeing is that valuations are more reasonable. It's a bit more sober than it was over the last couple of years.
Okay.
Talent is easier to acquire. Because imagine if like you're a developer and you work for one of these blue chip startups across the region, maybe you were laid off.
Mm.
So now you're able to hire them as a Malaysian startup because you know maybe it's cheaper, maybe it's more accessible to you to get this talent.
Mm.
I think these are conditions to actually help you build a great company.
Mm.
And I think there's a saying, right, that you make your money in the up market, right?
Mm.
But you build fortunes in the downtime,
right?
So I think this is where we are right now. We're able to build fortunes right now because we're able to invest very early in early stage companies who only have upside over the next 18 to 24 months as the market recovers.
Okay, a few weeks ago, I was at the MDV conference talking about the winter in venture capitalists. Do you feel that you're not facing a so-called winter in investing your cash into this space?
I think depends on who's saying it's winter, right? So I think for most startups, it feels like winter. And the reason for that is venture capital firms are being much, much more selective. So, you know, before this happened, maybe 6 months to a year ago, where it felt like a bit like a gold rush, right? People were like throwing money at all sorts of weird ideas at really, really high valuations.
Yeah.
What we saw was a bit of greed happening, right? And so startups were
a bit of greed.
Let's
talk about greed, per se. Yeah. But quantity of it.
Yeah, but you know, a lot of startups were kind of valuing themselves way overpriced from where they should be. And VCs were like, oh, I got to get into the deal, so they were paying premiums for these guys.
Yeah.
And I think that those days are over, right? So now VCs feel like, you know what? If I'm going to write a check, I'm going to be really, really, really sure that this is a good company to invest in.
Mm.
And sometimes taking my time to make an investment decision means that I can watch these guys perform in a downturn.
Yeah, okay.
How do they handle it? Like, how do they cut their payroll? Do they kind of manage their costs a bit better? Do they find alternative revenue streams? This is a good crucible for me to test these guys as they're going through a difficult period.
Yeah.
So I think that this is actually a really good moment for VCs to kind of make the bets. But from a startup standpoint, it's like, well, the checks are coming much more slowly now because they're being more deliberative as they deploy the capital.
Yeah, but that's not necessarily a bad thing, particularly when due diligence, more quality due diligence is being executed.
I mean,
and the monitoring of performance during a downturn, as you mentioned.
Yes.
That will truly test the mettle of these kind of startups.
And don't forget, right, like in the last big recession in 2008, we got companies like Slack, like Uber, like Airbnb, all these guys
Even Facebook, yeah?
Yes, Facebook was a bit earlier, but yes, around that time, they started growing really fast. Yeah. So like, fortunes are really made because of the downtime. And if you're a founder now, you just have to do one thing. If you're an entrepreneur, just don't die. Just stay alive, right? Stay alive as long as you can. If you have to cut costs, find alternative revenue streams, because you will make it through stronger than you did before if you do that.
Wise words from Aaron Sarma. Startups, don't die. Final words before we conclude our conversation.
So I think, you know, there's a lot of doom and gloom in the market. People are saying that it's going to be very painful, and I agree, it may be a very difficult period. But I think if you are a founder, this is a good time to be a founder. If you're an investor, it's also a great time to be an investor, because you get to see some really interesting entrepreneurs who are made in the fire, as it were. And to back these guys, that's our joy, right? As a Scale Up Malaysia, we get to back these companies in these difficult moments and see them grow. And as they grow, we are very happy as well, because, you know, we back guys from difficult moments.
Money lah.
And obviously, we are. Of course, that's where things
Say it plainly. But that's the point, right?
Exactly.
You are capitalists for a reason.
Exactly.
Right?
And ultimately, success breeds more success, right? And just to go back to our conversation just now, that's what Malaysia needs. We need success stories. The more success stories we have, the better we're able to kind of tell to the world that we're not just a flyover country. We're a country that builds high-quality founders with great startups that can go to the region and not the world.
It's really sad to be forgotten. I mean, if you don't like me, it's okay. If you don't know me, if you don't remember me, that's something else, man. That's really something else. Okay, we're going to continue on our coverage with Budget 2023 next week. We're going to be covering a whole host of issues, and anywhere from the budget allocation per se, through the implementation and execution of it, through the monitoring of the budget deployment throughout the year. Those are the kind of conversations that is going to take place. Also, do keep an eye out, not just on Notepad, my show, but also on my sister shows, Niaga Awani, Week Ahead, and many more. These are the conversations that will take place there. It's going to take place not just on Astro Awani Channel 501 on Astro, but on all our social media platforms as well, at 501 Awani. Until then, thanks very much for watching. And Aaron, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
My name is Ibrahim Sani. Catch you in the next one.